Chapter 10. Rhonda Besadi Diori stared hard at the Wren who had been assigned to keep watch on the communications board. And him. The creature seemed to be asleep. Silently, Rhonda activated a private frequency. Clicking the transmission switch did not activate his Kajitix repeater network, because one of the Duro's orbital cities was in the way. He resolved to be patient. With Jason Solo self-righteously determined to do nothing, Rhonda had turned to the sister. Jaina was the more experienced pilot, at any rate. Rhonda had been, he believed, more than polite, and solicitous. He'd praised her for her constant efforts to heal herself and regain her fighting trim. He'd hinted that he could get her back into action before Rogue Squadron could send another medrunner, taking her back out to the battle. Today's news out of Nal Hutta had been ghastly. Unknown and unknowable creatures released in droves. His relatives lying slain in their palaces. Rhonda must find some other way to use self-righteous young Jason, so obviously a son of his hut-killing mother. And he would. The Yuuzhan Vong had trained Rhonda in prisoner transport. He clicked the transmitter again. This time, a soft series of tones answered. Splendid. He leaned close to the transmitter.
"This is Rhonda," he said softly, keeping one eye on the sleeping Wren guard. "Who is on watch?"
He heard static for a long time. Then,
"Rhonda, where are you?"
His parents' voice.
"I am well," he told her, "and on Duro. I have only moments. I might be able to buy our people some concessions from the Yuuzhan Vong."
On board the cluster ship, he'd seen that they were desperate to get Jedi in custody, for study.
"There are two young Jedi here. I might be able to deliver one. If they would be interested, have them contact me at the settlement they call 32. It's near a large open-pit mine that's been made into a reservoir."
"Well done, Rhonda," Borga said. "Something with which to bargain. We have too little of that. The invaders do not seem to indulge themselves with any of our trade goods. We are trying to win rights to Tatooine as a safe world. I will do what I can."
The moment Rhonda signed off, he wondered if he'd done the right thing. Selling Jason might be a mistake. Jason still might join him if Jaina led the way. Well, he could always claim the young human escaped. With two options open, his fantasies of a strike team and the chance of buying his people a haven, one or the other would surely turn for his benefit. Maybe both. He turned his head slightly. The ineffectual Wren guard slept on. Keeping peace on a team of research scientists who were competing for limited resources was starting to remind Leia of trying to feed 2-year-old force-strong twins from the same plate. Only her hopes for a reborn world and a refugee haven kept her going. One woman pounded Leia's makeshift conference table.
"Our best hope," she said, scowling, "is to develop that master net. Without a self-perpetuating web of interdependent organisms, everything we do will either undo itself in less than a generation, or else overbreed without natural controls. We can..."
"Overbreed?"
Dr. Plea, the Ho-Din, folded his long, pale green arms over his lab coat.
"At the moment, unless they do overbreed, how in Kessel are we going to make any headway? They've given us a planet, and it's a planet we've got to get under control. And he's no help at all."
Overbreed? The Yuuzhan Vong had to breed like crazy, Leia reflected. Otherwise, how could they throw away so many warriors' lives? Then she frowned at the single vacant chair. Once again, Dacid Kriar had begged off by comlink. Once, she hadn't minded it. Three times, she disliked it. But this made 5 meetings out of 5. No wonder Kriar's fellow workers resented him.
"He's reactive," the meteorologist said. "He responds to crises only if we point them out."
The microbiologist raised a finger. "But he has solved every one of them. We've kept him so busy fixing our problems that he hasn't had time to do anything original lately."
"So put him to work on your master web," Dr. Plea growled. "Get this world seeded and clean it up so we can take down these domes. I'm not claustrophobic, but..." "The Sith you're not."
Aj Koenis, the big Tals, nudged him with a powerful-looking furry arm.
"I've seen your..."
Leia pushed wearily to her feet. "Does anyone else have a progress report?" Sidrus Kolb stood.
"Cloud seeding is off to a shaky start, but..."
"Shaky?" demanded Kala,
a Quarren who had missed the previous meeting.
"I asked you to delay that another 6 weeks. I've barely made headway with existing surface water. The last rainfall samples we took had 600 parts per million of..."
And they were off again. This time Leia let them run. Sadly, everyone's project seemed to threaten everyone else's. Interlinked as they were, they ought to support each other. She would find a way to make them cooperate, or else she'd send them all home and start over with a fresh crew. Duro was too important to lose to their bickering. Not many hours later, another emergency called Leia to the supply depot, where she released her frustration on a hapless shipping clerk.
"What do you mean the rest of it isn't coming until next week? We need that allotment. The new hydroponics will stall without soluble potash, or whatever it is. Blast those Duros!"
The supply clerk, to his credit, sat there and took it until she paused for breath.
"Sorry," Leia muttered. "Not your fault. We're all getting a little short in the fuse. And I am glad to get that mining laser. Can you open a line to Buru?"
10 minutes later, she was getting another runaround on the ground orbit comm unit.
"Listen,"
she said, gritting her teeth to keep from shouting.
"I want that stuff here, where it belongs. I've got the biggest population on world."
"Sorry, ma'am," the voice on the other end said. "Corduro took that shipment to Settlement 32 for their water treatment plant, with an allowance for next month. They do supply you with..."
"Next month?"
Incredulous, Leia glared at the Goku.
"They think we can stockpile? Who is this guy?"
The shipping clerk shook his head. "He seemed to feel that since the water purification benefits your people even more than his own, you wouldn't mind. Do you want to send a message?"
"I'm too busy to waste the effort. Contact Selcor and see if we can get a duplicate shipment."
"And a new administrator for Settlement 32, she would have added, if she'd thought it would do any good. Maybe Selcor could draft Lando and Tendra. Down a stone tunnel between Gateway's laboratory building and the toxic marshes, Nomanor had set up an underground office. Leia Organa Solo's people had dug out the long tunnel. He'd created a side passage, using small organisms that fed on soft rock. As they bloated and died, he disposed of them by the thousands deep in the marshes. There they decomposed, their gut bacteria working the miracles that delighted Organa Solo's people. He marched through his outer chamber, fingering the disengagement spot on his Gableth masker. Pore by pore, it pulled out of his body. He gritted his teeth. Unlike Warmaster Savang La and the rest of them, he did not believe that his pain fed the gods. He claimed to serve Yun Harla, the trickster. And if she did exist, she probably loved the deception. But Nomanor served only himself and his chance of promotion. He had told the Warmaster the truth, by one definition. Leia Organa Solo was not true Jedi.
and her daughter still was not proven. But if Savang Wa thought of them that way, he would be all the more impressed when Nomanor destroyed them. As soon as 32 collapsed, Organa Solo would probably put him to work analyzing the catastrophe. He wished he didn't have to avoid her. He would love to see her face when they brought word that her children had been caught in the disaster. He shook off the semi-solid mass of masker around his ankles, then stretched languorously, relishing the sensation of free, living air on his own skin. He had an hour to spare, to relax. He plucked one of his tiny pets off the wall and hefted it one-handed. It didn't feel quite fully grown, which made it perfect for another purpose. Stretching up, he pressed its wriggling cilia deep into a ceiling crack. He'd weakened several sections of ceiling this way, then stationed other kinds of creatures down in the fracture zones. On his command, they could inflate themselves like woodcutters' wedges, bringing down long or deep stretches of ceiling. It was simply one more precaution. Jason crouched at the edge of a hut, scraping worm-like creatures off the underside of its synthplas eaves.
"They could be edible,"
Metza cautioned, gripping her hips to make a bunch of culottes fabric on each side. One of her people had found these creatures less than an hour ago.
"Maybe we could raise them? Extra protein for the frags, too?"
Jason tried not to gag as he sealed his sample sack. "It's a thought. But feel this spot on the eaves. There's a pit." He ran a hand along the area where he'd scraped off the wriggling, finger-length creatures. "They're actually eating synthplas."
"Then carry them in something other than that skimpy little sack."
Jason wasn't going to take them far. "Have your people watch for more." He looked down the narrow lane. "This spot is close to the offloading area. They probably came in on a supply ship." At Hydroponics 2, Jason found Romani, the other clan leader, who'd been a biologist, working alongside Han and Jaina.
"Not my specialty,"
Romani insisted when Jason presented the wriggling sample sack. One of the worm-like creatures seized a pinch of synthplas and started chewing. Han glowered. Jaina put down a hydrospanner and adjusted her goggle mask. Jason flicked the creature off the synthplas. "Maybe not, Romani, but you're the best authority we have. Without sending over to Gateway, I didn't want to do that."
"Right."
Romani ran long fingers through his bushy mane.
"They'd quarantine us. And if the Duros heard about this, they might not send any more ships. We were mighty glad to get that extra shipment."
He and Han exchanged a knowing look. Jason's mind bounced back to the Duros. "I wonder if one of the core Duro ships brought in the egg pod these," he shook the little sack, "hatched from." Each gray worm had 9 segments, and twice that many legs, with massive black eyes and mouth parts that were all out of proportion to the rest of their bodies. Jaina shook her head.
"Can't see them?" Han asked gently.
She blinked.
"I am getting better. The blurs have edges."
"Here we are," the Rin said, eyeing the creatures, "huddled under a synthplas dome."
"Great," Han said. "Just great."
Jason pulled his cloak around him a little tighter. "Romani, you and Metza could organize the children into hunt teams. We've got a little sucrose set aside for treats. We could pay them by the worm."
"Hey, Droma," Han shouted over the top of a hydroponics vat. "I don't suppose you people eat little wiggly bugs."
A white-maned head appeared over the transparent lid.
"With the right spices," Droma said with grave dignity, "almost anything is edible. And
Rhonda would probably love them."
This time, Jason finished Droma's sentence,
Then he looked aside. Hans stared at Jaina, arching his eyebrows, his eyes soft and sad. Jason glanced from his father to his sister, comparing profiles. People generally claimed she resembled a young Leia, but below her bobbed hair, her forehead and cheeks really did have the same angles as Hans. Jason abruptly pitied any man who wounded Jaina's heart with less than a galaxy between himself and her father. As Jaina hiked off with Romani to look for Metsa, Jason asked his dad, "Do you think all this is going to take the edge off her fighting ability?" "If she doesn't want it to, it won't." Han shifted his weight, frowning. "She's too much like her mother." Jason looked up sharply, hearing a depth of loneliness that Han never expressed openly. "You're right," he told Han, not wanting to say too much. He hustled after Jaina, though. He caught up at Metsa's hut. "I think it's time we went looking for Mom," he told his twin. Lenya, this morning's comm operator, stared at the transceiver with her oblique eyes wide. Even Rhonda seemed flabbergasted. Jaina had found Admiral Dizelwitz's soft spot. He had some sympathy for injured military personnel. Jaina had been given immediate access to the outsystem relay. "Selcor!" A human male wearing a high blue collar and short cape appeared on the relay screen, amid the usual cloud of blurred snowflakes. Deep space relays went down or out of repair every day, blasted by the Yuuzhan Vong or sideswiped by space debris, but nobody dared to go out and fix them. They'd lost commercial Holonet broadcasts completely. "How shall I direct your call?" Jaina sat up a little straighter, and Jason pulled his hand off her shoulder. "We're looking for Ambassador Organa Solo," Jaina said. "Do you have official business?" "Not again," Jason groaned to himself. "One more runaround." "Yes," Jaina said. "We're calling in from a Selcor locale." "Not bad on the spur of the moment," Jason muttered while the screen blanked. "You're not the only one who can make the truth sound impressive."
"Get the news from Nal Hutta," Rhonda urged.
Gamely, they stayed online while bureaucratic underlings shuffled them back and forth. Then a long-faced, elegant woman appeared, her black hair pulled back severely to show exquisite ears.
"Jedi Solo," she said smoothly, "and what a pleasant surprise, two Jedi Solos. How may I assist you?"
Jason bent toward Jaina's ear, but she'd already identified the voice.
"Senator Shesh," Jaina said. "We need to contact Mother. I've been furloughed out. Injured. The last we heard anything specific, she was on Coruscant. Can your office trace her?"
"I'm sure we can," the senator said. "It is splendid to see you together, and looking so well."
There was something false in her tone, though. Jason leaned toward the image. Rhonda pushed forward into his way.
"Senator," he gushed, "please, you must send additional troops to—"
"I'm sorry."
Senator Shesh tilted her head.
"We mustn't hold this line open for non-essential communications. I'll have my staff return your call."
"Wait." Jason stretched forward, over Jaina's shoulder. "This connection took us an hour to—" The senator's image dissolved into a network of fine diagonal lines. Jaina gargled a cry of frustration.
"Rhonda! I'm the one who got the call through. I'm the one who deserved to talk to her. You ruined it!"
Rhonda undulated backwards, away from the console. Tempted to insist that Selcor would surely call back, Jason pressed his lips shut. The callback might take days, or weeks, or it might not come. "Speaking of worms," he said, and he couldn't resist glancing at Rhonda as the hut left the shed. Senator Shesh rubs me wrong.
Jaina frowned.
But she's been named to the advisory council. She's practically the head of CELCOR.
I know, Jason said. And CELCOR isn't exactly keeping its commitments. Think about the way she was standing, too. And that falseness in her tone of voice. The way she held herself and that strange little smile. They reminded me of the holovids I've seen of another senator.
Jaina twisted the mask in her lap.
I hate guessing games.
Palpatine. Pre-Empire, he explained. When he was on his way up, and he didn't care who or what he destroyed to get there.
Jaina frowned.
And she's the one, she said, who delivers what we need to survive.
She's also the one, Jason said, who put us here. Who decided Duro was safe.
I don't like where you're taking this, Jason.
Neither do I, he said softly. Not at all.